Welcome to the Chad Taylor Radio Show. Here's Chad Taylor.
Joining me on the show is somebody that I've been wanting to talk to for a long time. I've been a fan since I can remember. Anybody that knows me knows the Beach Boys, one of my all-time favorite bands, actually finally took my mom to Hawthorne, California. We flew out there and let her see where the Beach Boys originated, and we actually got to go see the monument that's erected in honor of the Beach Boys in Hawthorne. I've seen him numerous times on the road. Mr. David Marks joins me. How are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you, Chad?
Oh, just fantastic. Even better now that you're on the line, and I'm sure you just heard me talk about the monument in Hawthorne where it all started. Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't the monument erected right where you grew up?
Yeah, it all began right there under the freeway.
And you were right across the street, right, from the Wilson family?
Yes, our houses were across the street. They were both corner houses. Now that those lots are under the 105 freeway from the Harbor Freeway to the LA Airport, so they erected the landmark somewhere a block or something away from where the original houses once stood.
I had the chance to take my mom with me, who never flies ever, but I finally got her to California. It was one of her dreams, and we went and did a lot of the sightseeing where the Beach Boys recorded music, where you guys grew up. We actually took her to the cemetery where Carl Wilson is buried, and it was just a great moment for her and I, because that's how we bonded. You know, as far back as I can remember, being in the car with her, putting her 8-track on, and us listening to Beach Boys music, singing along, and that love has sustained our entire relationship, and now we've passed that down to my daughter, Macy Lynn, who enjoys going to see the band, and she's 13, and I'm sure you hear stories like this all the time.
You'd be surprised. Well, maybe you wouldn't, but many, many mothers have told me how they sang their babies to sleep with Surfer Girl, songs like that, and call it multi-generational, and it's been passed down. I remember I really liked my parents' music and sought it out. And nowadays, because of the internet and everything, the younger people are discovering the band on their own.
Take us back to when you were younger, when this whole thing started. You're across the street from the Wilsons, and I believe you were the youngest member of the band, weren't you?
Yes, 14 when the band actually hit. Well, maybe 13.
That would be the same age as my daughter. I can't imagine Macy Lynn playing lead guitar riffs. And you were doing this at 13, 14 years old.
Yeah, much less being out, that was the tough part.
So this thing breaks, and it breaks big. Were you ready for this? Was your family ready for this? Did you even anticipate something like this happening?
No, but we just rolled with the punches, and it all flowed nicely until, the massive amounts of money started pouring in, and the problems started, as you can imagine, the grown-ups and, stuff like that. That's another issue.
Your parents stepped in at that point, right? And they wanted to know, where's this money going? Is my son being compensated correctly? All the questions that every parent would have, by the way.
Well, I don't know. My parents really, they weren't that business savvy. They were hillbillies from Pennsylvania. No offense, but...
Now, you appeared on, the first four albums? Is that right?
Some of the stuff I recorded on showed up later in albums. And then, of course, later on, the compilations of all the, past hits and things, countless number of compilations. And then we got the platinum for Endless Summer, triple platinum. And it goes on and on.
I think what makes me crazy as a guy who's a chart geek and historian is that for a while there, and you can elaborate on this, you were almost kind of just discredited, if you will. And what's wrong with that is you were on the big songs. The Beach Boys wouldn't be the Beach Boys without you. You were a big part of that. And I'm sure that had to be a big frustration for you.
Well, I always look at bands like Beatles and the Beach Boys and the Rolling Stones, and the list goes way down. And it's because there's a certain chemistry between people and a spiritual bubble. And nothing would be the same without all the elements being there.
Agreed.
So you're right. I think that it was, all part of the like a formula, like a little cocktail, or if you will. And I think Murray Wilson actually made an effort to erase me from history, but the hardcore fans, I think, realized that I was there doing, the birth. I was an embryo with these guys, growing up before the band was even conceived. We were, in the dirt outside, playing together with our cars and football and all that other crap, you know, childhood stuff. So it was, they were like the brothers, the family I really never had, because I was an only child, so I was there constantly across the street with those guys. That family.
Well, and after the Beach Boys, you went on to do your own thing. You had a group, The Marksmen, and you guys were on A&M Records, if I remember correct.
Well, that was actually during, I was still with, you know, traveling with the Beach Boys when I had The Marksmen. And we were A&M's very first band, other than the Tijuana Brass, naturally. But and then we went on to Warner Brothers and had a release. But there was a rumor I heard from an L.A. DJ at the time that Murray was threatening not to give radio stations Beach Boys releases if they played my record. So I wouldn't put it past him, but I don't hold it against him. I think he was just looking out for his own, you know, family first thing. And he had a little bit of a grudge because he wanted to manage the Marksmen, and I told him that that was the reason why I was leaving the Beach Boys, and I wouldn't have, you know, why would I want you to manage my band?
Yeah, that's kind of funny to me that he wants to manage you guys, but you're leaving the Beach Boys because of him. The stories I hear about Murray are legendary.
He wanted to compete with Brian. See, the whole dispute between those two guys was that Murray wanted to have more of a creative role. He wanted to be more of a producer and had a vision, and no one else was invited into Brian's vision, especially. So that was the conflict with those guys. And so that with Beach Boys, so we saw an opportunity. He heard me rehearsing with my band across the street, for crying out loud, you know, like 130 feet away. So he ended up with the Sun Rays. They were a little local band. They were playing in bars and stuff. And they were rhythm and blues kind of stuff. Pretty good musicians, Eddie Medora and Rick Hannon, and Marty and Steve, those guys turned into the Sun Rays. And Murray wrote some songs for those guys. He wrote, you know, a couple of decent songs. That song Breakaway that the Beach Boys did was co-written by Reggie, what is it? I forget, but that was actually Murray. He had a surname for that song.
After you leave the Beach Boys, you got the Marksmen project going. At any time, were you regretting the decision that you left the Beach Boys? Was there at any point you went, I should have just stuck this one out?
Not until I got older. At the time, my father advised me that I should stick it out, you know, like a man. But I wasn't a man. I was a kid, and I wanted to do my own thing. And Brian wasn't really taking my songwriting prowess very seriously. So my car songs were just as silly as his car songs. I
right.
Them.
Yep.
But the thing is, I just had the little, you know, adolescent ego, arrogant thing going for me, and I was on fire, and I was surging forward. It wasn't until I was in my 20s, you know, scraping around, doing different things, when I started thinking about, the extra money would have come in handy about now, so I should have maybe, you know, listened to my father.
But, as we get older, we're like, man, our parents really knew what they were talking about.
But at my age, I look back and think, you know, wow, I've had such a fantastic life and everything that I probably wouldn't change much, you know, I wouldn't change anything because of the experience and the friendships and love and family and things that I've been fortunate enough to have, and the Beach Boys being part of that, you know. So I consider myself very lucky.
What's the connection with Casey Kasem? He's one of my heroes. And I believe you worked in a band that he was producing or endorsing or promoting or something like that, right?
Yeah, there were these three guys who had a singing act. Eddie Haddad, his brother and cousin, would show up at Beach Boys where we were playing on a lot of the venues. And we would back them up. And it just so happens that Eddie's cousin was Casey Kasem. So after the Marksmen sort of tanked after a year or so, the drummer from the Marksmen and I, Mark Grossclose and I, went over to Eddie's band. It was called The Band Without a Name. And what we did was actually went around town with Casey Kasem to all the, you know, concerts that he was putting on. He always, you know, constantly putting on shows. And we would back up the singers like, you know, Caesar and Cleo, who were actually Sonny and Cher at the time. And all the present day hit people with hit singers that didn't actually, you know, have their own band. So we were basically a backup band. And we did that for about a year or so. It was great fun and experience. I think we recorded a couple things with Charles Wright of Watts 140. 45th Street Band, or I forget the name of the street, one of those numbers.
And everything comes full circle, though. You know,
yeah, it kind of does.
You're in your 20s. You're like, man, I should have listened to my dad. But you go out and you do these things with Casey Kasem, and you're having some success there. But then fast forward, you actually come back into the Beach Boys fold. I believe it was in the late 90s where you actually returned to the band.
Yeah, and I was never actually that far away from them during the years. They would follow me around, and I'd end up sitting in with them. But yeah, I started doing more steady things around the early, mid-90s with Mike's Beach Boys. The plan was to have Mike and Carl and I, and I think Bruce, I don't know, there was some sort of a behind-the-scenes political move going on that I was totally unaware of. But as a result, I got to be in the band. And unfortunately, you know, we were hoping that Carl would come back and I would be able to play with, you know, my childhood friend Carl again, but tragically he passed away and that didn't happen. But I went on with them for a couple of years, and around the year 2000 I got sick and started, you know, I just stayed home for a few years.
You've been very vocal about, I believe it's hepatitis C when you got sick, is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. I hope to think that I made a little bit of a difference back then. There wasn't really a very good treatment at the time. When I started doing treatment, it was 50-50.
Well, your autobiography, you titled it The Lost Beach Boy,
sure.
But I want to tell you, it's a great title, but for us fans, you were never the Lost Beach Boy. You were always a Beach Boy. I just always wanted to tell you that.
That touches my heart. Thank you. But it was more of a metaphor, I think. I was like lost in my soul and that kind of stuff. You know, if you read the book, there was a lot of shenanigans that I put myself through for, you know, just stupidity mainly, I guess, you know. Never grew up, pretty much, is what the story is.
Well, I think we all go through that as entertainers. I've just, you know, reading your story, talking to you now, I can relate to you on so many levels. I really can. And I was really happy. Gosh, what year would that be? I want to say it was like 2012, because I was doing morning radio in Minnesota. And then I heard that you were recording a new album with the surviving Beach Boys. That's why God made the radio. And then you were going on that 50th anniversary tour. And I'm like, okay, now everything's right in the universe. Everything's right for the Beach Boys fans. We finally get Brian Wilson, Al Jardine, Bruce Johnston, Mike Love, and David Marks on the same stage.
Yeah, and those little films of Carl and Dennis, too, that was kind of touching. They were there with us in spirit, I'm sure. I mean, I remember I thought I saw their ghosts up on the top Capitol Records Tower in Hollywood when they were taking our pictures up there like 10, 15 years ago, whenever it was. But I try not to, you know, I try to tell people not to forget Dennis and Carl.
Absolutely. My mom's all-time favorite was Dennis Wilson. In fact, that's why I played the drums, was because of Dennis Wilson. And Dennis had given my mom some drumsticks back at a show in the late 60s. And she held on to them and then passed them down to me. And I'll never forget where I was when I heard the news that Dennis Wilson had drowned. I believe it was 83. I wanted to ask you, how did Dennis's death and Carl's death affect you? And where were you when you got that news?
You know, I was really upset about Dennis's death after it sunk in. At first, when I first heard the news, I had a friend who was doing news on the local radio station, and he popped into the recording studio that I happened to have been in that night. He said one of the Beach Boys died, but I don't know which one yet. And I immediately had said, I thought it might have been Brian because of his drug thing, but I guess he was, you know, I don't know. I forget what year that was, 86 or 83. Or I forget the
year. I believe it was 83 when Dennis passed.
Anyway, I found out it was Dennis. And a few days later, it hit me and I felt very sad, you know, with someone who's a part of your childhood.
Of course.
Especially when you're, you know, it's like the brother I never had, really, you know, the Wilson guys, the kids were my family pretty much. I mean, my mother was more like a sister to me than an actual, you know, parent. I never really got much parental or adult supervision for that matter back then, if you can imagine, you know, the child star thing, you know, having to be tutored and yanked out of school, and then Brian coming over at 3 a.m. and yanking you into the studio, which, you know, I wouldn't trade a second of any of that. That's how it went.
Is there anything about Brian Wilson, and a lot's been written about Brian, and I agree with most. I mean, I think he's one of the most prolific songwriters, producers ever. Is there anything that nobody's written about Brian that you were like, God, I wish somebody would say this about Brian, or I wish the public knew about Brian? Is there anything that comes to mind when I say that you're like, man, I really want people to know this about Brian Wilson?
Yeah, actually, you know, Brian didn't become, you know, a legend until his craziness, but I think we all have craziness. And if people could just realize what a vibrant, bubbling, you know, the guy vibrated literally with music back when he was a kid, and he was just funny, very intellectual and prolific, and he wrote his own music. He did his own copyrights. You know, when they had to write a chart of the song, he learned how to write music in high school, and the way he would arrange those jazz chords with the vocals, you know, he was influenced by the Four Freshmen, as everyone knows, and that was his jazz education that we incorporated with Chuck Berry kind of rock and roll, and that marriage, you know, they were so different that they just worked together, the jazz and the rock and roll. It's weird. It just was something that no one had ever heard before, and it worked.
When you guys were on the 50th anniversary tour, there was plans, I thought, for it to continue, and then Mike Love just kind of went back to doing his thing with Bruce Johnston, and it looks like then you went out with Al and Brian and did your guys' thing. But was there hopes that you guys would just keep that unit together past that 50th anniversary tour?
It actually went longer than originally planned, as a matter of fact, and it got to a point where Mike actually had a touring business, a company. And that was his business, and it was his company, Melico. They're touring with the Beach Boys, and he had made some commitments with that group, and so we had a good run. It did go like maybe 20 gigs more than it should have, than it was originally planned, and we kind of fantasized about doing more stuff. You know, we probably could have. I think some offers were coming in, but it was to a point where people's individual lives and business interests had to, you know, continue as, you know, business as usual before the tour happened. But that was a good 2-year run. We were together a lot for about 2 years, I think, you know, for all the rehearsal and preparing and TV shows and stuff before the actual tour started. And then we got to travel around the world together for about a year there.
Was there some healing at that time for you guys as a unit, do you think?
You know, whenever I get with all of us together, I kind of, especially, you know, Mike and Brian, I revert back into maybe a 12-year-old. And we all, like, pick up where we left off with me being the annoying kid at 71 years old. But it's funny and it's fun, and I wish we could get together more often before it's too late. But like I said, we have our own lives, and I don't think much socially in common anymore, really.
What is something about David Marks that's never been written or asked? I asked you that same question about Brian Wilson, but what is there something about you? You're like, gosh, I wish people would ask me, or I wish that they knew, or nobody's talked about.
The thing with Brian and how he was when he was a kid, before he started having little problems when he was in his late 20s, I wish people knew more about how he was back then, because no one ever got to see that part of him. And as far as I'm concerned, as far as my role, I don't think people realize, like what you said at the outset about that I actually did have a role in the beginning, an influence musically, the way I played the guitar. And I hear from people today about how I influenced. They listen to those little choppy licks that I was doing on the records, and that, you know, influenced them to take up playing guitar. And that's a rewarding thing to hear from people. And I don't know if many of the fans are aware actually of my involvement. I think a lot of them think I was just an incidental kind of accidental thing that happened, but
do you have any stories about Iowa in particular? Do you remember ever playing here in Iowa or touring Iowa when you were with the Beach Boys?
Oh, yeah. Davenport, Iowa. And I forget some of the names, but we went all through Iowa. I remember. Yeah, that was our first couple of big tours that we did. We always hit Iowa, Midwest.
Yeah, you brought surf into the Midwest because obviously we didn't know anything about either coast here in the Midwest, so we got to live that through your lyrics and the songs.
I know, but I think, didn't the Midwest people relate more to the hot rods?
Yes, absolutely. Even today, yeah, they still relate to that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so thankful that Brian and Mike wrote those songs, you know, that were happy stuff, you know, California sunshine and hot rods, you know, girls with ponytails and stuff.
I do have one thing that I want to correct. I want to make sure that this is right, because, again, going back to what I said, I'm a historian, I'm a chart geek, I love facts. So when the Beach Boys were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame back in 88, you were not invited and you were not acknowledged. But did they finally rectify that?
Yeah, you know, at the time, nobody really knew where I was. Drunk in a ditch somewhere, probably. When the book came out, The Last Beach Boy came out, somebody from the organization read in there about my, you know, lack of involvement in the ceremony. So they did. They invited me to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Museum in Cleveland. And they had, you know, stacks of my book up in the bookstore. And they had a little, like, a get-together in their auditorium, which was full. It was packed. I think there might, I don't know, 500 people or something, where I kind of sat on the stage with the interviewer guy, like, remember David Frost, that kind of a thing?
Yep.
And it was a big hit. And, you know, it was almost embarrassing because, you know, they were giving me credit that I didn't deserve in some areas, I think. But they did, yes. They were very nice and gracious, and they made it up to me, bless their hearts. So now I can say I'm in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
As you should have been in the first place, I might add.
Why, thank you. Yeah, that was my fault, I think, for disappearing off the face of the earth. You know, there's no reason why I couldn't have, you know, stayed closer to the guys, but I was sort of in a crazy state. You know how we do.
Of course. By the way, for those that are listening, if you want to learn more about David, DavidLeeMarks.com is the website. He's also really active on social media. What are you doing today? I know you go out and still tour and perform, and I think you do something with Jan and Dean.
Well, yeah, Jan unfortunately passed away, but Dean and I do shows together frequently with the group called the Surf City All-Stars, which is comprised of, you know, ex-Beach Boys side guys, you know, that have toured with the Beach Boys band, Gary Griffin and Philip Bardowell, David Logaman, Chris Farmer, all those guys have done their tenure with the Beach Boys band, and yeah, so we try to do as much as we can. We go out and we do corporate parties around the country. I'm just like, every morning I try to go to the park and play my guitar and sing. And then I come back here to my little studio and try to record some stuff, which I'm hopefully going to start putting out on my, like the website and the social media thing. The Instagram stuff is, I'm going to try to put some music out on those sites this coming next year. I plan to be pretty active. I'm going to try and get some more live performances going. And, you know, you never know when, just when you forget about it, Mike Love calls you and wants you to go out for whatever reason. So I'm always ready to put on my Beach Boys cap and go out on the road.
Well, we'll invite you here to Des Moines. We'd love to have you.
Well, I'd love to come back to Des Moines. And I didn't grow up. I spent the first 5 years of my life in Pennsylvania, right next to you guys over there. And so I'm sort of a Midwestern Eastern roots guy. I didn't move to L.A. till I was 7.
I got to ask you this question. This is for my producer, for Adam. Your Mount Rushmore of guitar players. Who would you put on your Mount Rushmore?
Well, there's a guy named Alan Holdsworth from Wales, that I really, you know, love that guy's playing. Eric Clapton, B.B. King, Robert Johnson. Oh, and let's see. The list goes on and on, you know. But you can just fill in the last one. I suppose one of the most influential guitarists, I would think, even influencing the Beach Boys, is someone that people haven't really heard of much. Duane Eddy was from the late 50s and through the 60s with his instrumental songs. He had songs in music, in movies and stuff. So he would play his big twangy guitar. He's an instrumentalist, no singing, And he influenced us a lot. You know, the opening riff on Surfin' USA is a Duane Eddy song called Movin' in a Groovin'. And Duane Eddy was the one who started doing the bow, 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 bow with the string, you know, the bending down thing. And so he's in a bunch of Beach Boys songs, just let me put it that way.
Let me just say this in closing, David. Like I told you when I opened up this interview, you're one of the guys I've always wanted to talk to. I finally got that opportunity. I want to thank you for the great music. I want to thank you just for continuing to do it. And I hope that we can keep in touch. I really do. I'd love to invite you next year, whether it's with the Beach Boys, whether it's you by yourself. I'd love to bring you here to Des Moines. There's so much more of your story I'd like to tell. And again, just thank you for the music, and I appreciate your time today.
Well, you've got my number. So anytime, I'd be glad to do anything that you ask me. Well, most anything. I do what I'm told and within reason. But it was my honor. Thank you for the time. Call again.
Find us on Twitter and Instagram at Chad Taylor Radio. And don't forget to subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform.